Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You can change one. What would it be? Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Let's go to the phones. Former Giants Southpaw member of the Giants Wall of Fame, Kirk Reeder, kind enough to join Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Woody, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate the time. How are you and the family holding up these days?
We're doing good as we can. We're just sheltered in place here in Illinois and just hanging out, and you get to know your family a lot better when you can only go to the grocery store, and that's not the only place that we have gone in the last 3 weeks. So but we're hanging in there just like hopefully everybody else in the country is doing.
Absolutely, and we appreciate your time as always. You know, let's pretend for a second that the coronavirus pandemic was happening back in your day, that you guys were, you know, in Arizona, you're going through spring training, you're trying to get ready for the start of the season, and then this kind of shelves everything. As a player, what's going through your mind, especially as a pitcher? You got to figure it's going to take plenty of time to ramp back up. So when you're thinking from a baseball perspective, what would be going through your mind in terms of your career?
Boy, I would just start trying to, you know, because obviously it looks like they're going to try and play sometime. So as a player, as a pitcher, I would just be trying to do the workouts probably almost like it was an off season, and trying to find somewhere where I could throw with one person. I know I always threw with my high school coach, just me and him in the off season all the time, and probably treat it just like that. I would probably have been back here in Illinois and just trying to play catch and stay in the same shape I would as it was the winter time. And, you know, the only thing I can kind of relate it to that I did go through was the strike year of 94. Obviously, it wasn't a virus that was affecting the whole world, which, you know, obviously is a lot more serious. But in terms of trying to stay in shape, they kept telling us that whatever scenario would happen if we had a World Series or playoffs, that the Expos, we would have been in it because we had the best record. So I just was throwing to my high school team and trying to stay sharp that way. And so that's kind of about the only thing I can relate it to that I went through. And, you know, do the best you can. I mean, it's obvious it's a trying time for everybody. So I'm sure guys are just trying to do the best to stay in shape and be ready when the bell rings.
What do you think of the idea of a resumption exclusively in Arizona? A plan was floated about having all 30 teams playing 13 different stadiums in and around Arizona. Do you think that would corrupt too much the integrity of what a baseball season should be?
Boy, it would be hard. I mean, and obviously it's going to be different no matter what the result or when and if baseball comes back. You know, it's going to be different. So I'm sure that the players and the owners and everyone, they're going to have to try and get on the same page and agree on a bunch of different aspects to get this season underway. And I read a little bit, and I think first and foremost is obviously going to be just the health and to be able to work with the healthcare officials and make sure everything is safe. Because, gosh, I'm a huge, you guys know me enough, I'm a huge sports fan of all sports, and And I'm missing them like everybody, but you still have to take that step back and be like, okay, you know, I know I'm hurting about sports, but this is bigger than sports. And so we need to be on the same page and make sure everybody's healthy and all the people are telling the leagues that, hey, okay, it's okay to do this. We can get some people together and figure it out. And then I would be okay with it going forward.
Well said. I'd like you to humor me for a second. You're saying that, you know, during that strike year, you know, you went back to your hometown and throwing to the local high school. When you did throw to the local high school, was any of those kids trying to shell you? Were they coming at you? Or was it just like, you know what, every time I go up, I want to sit these guys down because, you know, they were just like wanting to go home and tell their friends, I hit Woods. I hit him.
Oh, heck yeah. I even had the high school coach. Now, it was a different coach than the one I'm throwing to that I played for. And he was a younger guy, so he had played like at college. I don't even know if it was Division One, Division Two, but he was coaching up. So he actually wanted to take his hacks too, thinking,
"Oh yeah,
hey, I can hit a major league guy. This guy's not that good." But no, I think I might have even amped it up more because I don't want those little kids in my hometown going around saying they hit me. I could handle it when I was back then. If Barry would have hit me on the Giants, but I don't want little Tommy running around town the rest of my life saying he's
exactly.
That's great.
Oh my God, that's a great story.
Kirk Reeder joining us here on 95.7 The Game. You know, one of the plans baseball's put in place for how they can try to get back and make this thing work involves 7-inning games and lots of doubleheaders. There's a lot to sort through, but take me through some of the strategy if the game gets shortened to 7 innings. If it only be for this season, does that make the bullpen more or less valuable? How do you think a manager would want to deploy his pitching arms in that sort of situation?
Boy, it would be different. The only thing I'd relate it to would probably be some college. You know, a lot of guys that are pitching or playing probably played in college at a high level, and they have those doubleheaders sometimes where it's 7 innings. And – oh, I know. I might have got a few more complete games if I could have pitched 7 innings. Because I wasn't finishing many 9-inning games, and I know Dinner to attest to that. I didn't finish many of my games, but I do. I think it's going to be a big adjustment. Like I said earlier, whatever happens, it's probably not going to be what everybody's used to, obviously, in a normal season. So it'd probably just be learn on the fly. You'll probably have to talk to some guys and, you know, even talk to relievers to say, hey, you know, I might bring you in the, you know, fourth inning of it, you know, when guys are used to, because obviously like the fourth and the fifth inning of a 7-inning game is going to be the late innings of what guys are normally used to. So it'll be an adjustment period, but, you know, hey, guys will figure it out. I mean, once it gets going, I think everybody will be so happy that we're kind of hopefully over this coronavirus that I don't think many people care what's going on, just as long as they can get out and start getting back to somewhat of a normal life.
Part of the rumored plan would be to have players mic'd up at an increased rate and even to have a robo-umpire calling balls and strikes so as to promote social distancing. Are there any changes that baseball could implement during this kind of a different, weird season that might take hold and might change the game for the better, in your opinion?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, see, I would like the mic thing because I only played once every 5 days anyway. So that might like be more entertaining for me and keep the fans involved even more than what they are. But I don't know. I mean, I've heard, you know, I keep hearing that they've, even before all this started happening, that they were, you know, obviously thinking about the robot calling the, well, we'd still have the umpire, but they were calling the balls and strikes electronically. And
right.
But I don't know if I'd like that, but you know, you never know what's going to look good until you start implementing things. And that looks like they're at least going to try that. So I'm sure that'll have its ups and downs. So we'll see how that goes, but I don't know. I mean, I'm one of the guys that I've watched baseball my whole life since I was a kid, and I'm still kind of in the old school, even though I grew up and played in the 90s, 2000s. But I like it pretty much the way it is even now. I mean, so whatever they do, believe me, I'm still going to watch.
No question. That's awesome. Humor me again. I was listening to Joe ask the question, you know, if it goes only seven innings. And if you, you know, you played, you were in the front line pitching. So how would you change the way you go into a game if you knew that it's only seven innings, you only had to maybe pitch two or three? Is it, do you pitch with more velocity? And if so, do you see more injuries happening? How do you see that shaking out now if it is going to be seven innings? What's the biggest difference about the frontline pitching, first five of those with no rotation?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking, like I said, I think you're going to have, if you got seven inning games, guys, starters in today's game are programmed a lot to just go, you know, six, seven innings, you know, at the most, and the bullpens have played such a huge part of the way the game has changed. But, you know, starters are, I mean, especially top-line guys. I mean, you're telling me you're going to take Scherzer, it's hard to get those guys out, you know, nine innings. You could basically tell your bullpen, hey, you're probably got an off day right now. I mean, because seven innings, I mean, that's what a starter's are shooting for almost in today's game. So like I said, it's going to change. I would think just if you have those dominant guys like that are your seven, eight, nine guys in a normal game, you might use them, you know, five, six, seven if your starter or if one of your starters, you're using a guy that, hey, you don't feel he can go out there and go the six, seven, you probably wouldn't hesitate too much to bring him in, and maybe even the fourth inning if there's a big situation, you know, bases loaded. And that's what I said, it'll be different because you'd have to be telling these guys, hey, if the bases are loaded, you know, two outs in the fourth, I might bring you in because we're nine outs away then if you get us from winning the game. And in a normal situation, fourth inning, you're still a long ways off. But it'll be interesting to see if they're playing a bunch of doubleheaders, because those scenarios will probably come up more than what you think.
Former Giants southpaw, member of the Giants Wall of Fame, the great Kirk Reeder, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Woody, we always appreciate the time. Thank you for coming on. Good luck to you and your family. Stay safe out there.
Hey, you guys too. Stay safe and healthy, and hopefully I'll talk to you here in a little bit with baseball back on.
Absolutely. We'd appreciate that very much. Thank you, Woody. I struggle with that, because if baseball shrunk to seven innings, on one hand, my initial thought is that you'd see way more bullpenning, where teams would come out and say, forget the traditional starter, we need to patch together a network of pitchers who can get us through seven innings on a regular basis. Gone are the days of the five-man rotation, and then turn it over to the bullpen six or seven innings in. Then on the other hand, I say to myself, if you've got a couple of really good starters who can give you seven innings, even if they struggle a little bit, you can have this rested bullpen, and then again, gone are the days of the five-man rotation, but you might go traditional starter, bullpen game, traditional starter. I wonder. I would say this. I doubt you'd want to spend $30 million a year on a starter like the Sox did with David Price if you're going to shrink to seven innings, because suddenly that doesn't seem as if it's as valuable, but I could be wrong with that, Dips.
No, I think you're right, and I was thinking the exact same thing as it pertains to the value of the, quote, ace or the starter, because you'd be better off having 12, 13 arms in the pen, because we know the rosters now are 26-man rosters. So you go with 13 pitchers, two or three starters traditionally, and the other days you go straight up bullpenning, because already you have pitchers who only go through the order twice, and maybe that's just four innings anyway. So why would you bother trying to put together all these aces, all these horses, when you're going to go to the pen anyway?
Today's show is brought to you by Fremont Bank, still open to serve the community they love with full service banking and no compromises. We have reached the conclusion of Bay Area Championship Madness. Today, right now, it's the finals. And for more on that, I turn the show over to the one, Data Dan Dibley. Dibley?
Thank you, Joe. It's been pretty fun. It's been interesting to see as we've put the last 16 championship teams against one another, and we are now down to the final two teams in Bay Area Championship Madness. Music, if you would, please, Nice Guy Steven. It's going to be a battle of Warriors versus Warriors, gentlemen, and we start with the winner of the surprise bracket It's the 2015 Golden State Warriors. The surprise element came early in the year when you had a rookie head coach. You had a team coming off a seven-game ouster at the hands of the L.A. Clippers. You didn't know how good this Warrior team would be until they won 16 straight early in the year, and they would never look back. They would go on to have 8 and 12 game win streaks in a year in which they would win 67 games, although you didn't quite see exactly who they would be until the postseason when they went out and swept New Orleans. They went to Memphis, struggled, they righted the ship, and they finally took out the Grizzlies after being down 2-1. They took out Houston to win the Western Conference, and they were on to their first finals appearance in 4 decades. We know they split against Cleveland, then lost on the road in Ohio, down 2-1. Andre Iguodala comes into the starting lineup, and the rest, as they say, NBA championship history. The Warriors would go on to win 3 straight and claim their first title since 1975.
6 seconds, 5 seconds, the jumper is no good. Curry the rebound. It's taken 40 years, but once again, the Bays team is the best team. The Golden State Warriors have won the NBA title.
Tim Roy, the call as the Warriors go 16-5 in the postseason. Andre Iguodala, your finals MVP. Joe, they say it's never as good as the first time, and for this Warrior group, this first time was oh so sweet.
Such beautiful anxiety, if such an oxymoron can exist in this world. Such beautiful anxiety running through that playoff stretch that year. I remember the first day of the first game, game one, opening round against the New Orleans Pelicans. And I remember, I'm almost positive it was a Saturday. I remember walking my dog in my neighborhood and finally starting to see some yellow and blue, some gold and blue dot the landscape. People had started hanging some signs here and there. You started to see some T-shirts and whatnot out there. It wasn't overwhelming or anything like that, but you started to see it. And I thought, man, the playoffs are here. You woke up and it felt different because it was this great regular season, but it wasn't like the other Warrior runs where you felt you were owed or you felt it was coming and you took it for granted, which I'll be completely honest, I did every year. Totally took it for granted. Couldn't have been more arrogant with everything. And you started that run. And that first game against New Orleans got a little dicey late, but they held on. They figured out a way. They swept them. Then you had the anxiety of the 2-1 deficit against Memphis, and you thought, oh, my God, Memphis is just such a bad matchup. It's all going to fall apart. Then they get Harden, the Rockets. Tight game one. I remember Kershaw faced Mad Bum at Oracle in a day game, and then that night I was sitting next to JD, and then we both ran up to Bart at separate times, rolled over to Oracle, and then game one that night against Houston where Harden had a chance late and turned the ball over as he was crossing center court, and the Warriors go on to win that game and win that series. And then, of course, the LeBron series. I mean, you got to get past LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's just an incredible run. It was so much anxiety, but good anxiety, like that anticipation that's got you on edge, like a first date sort of thing. I love that year. Had so much fun with basketball that
butterflies.
Year.
And you're right about taking it for granted, and here we all sit with not only no Warriors playoffs, and we'd be getting ready for the NBA playoffs, by the way, and, of course, the Warriors wouldn't be in there, but no sports at all. So
they could have closed strong. You don't know that.
Yeah, you're right. They were not mathematically eliminated. I think they were down. Their tragic number was down to 2 or 3, I think, when the season ended. There's the magic number, of course, and then the tragic number, the number at which you are eliminated. But that was it's a special year, and it'll be interesting to see what the fans think, Joe, as we pit the 2015 Warriors in the Bay Area Championship Madness Final against their brethren, the 2017 Warriors. Nice guy, Steven. Well, it's a battle of championship Warriors teams, and this team eliminated the 2018 Warriors team, and this was the winner of the Super Team bracket, and we know that they're a super team because of what happened July 4th of 2016, where the Warriors were able to acquire Kevin Durant via free agency. Lorenzo Neal saw it coming. Lostradamus made the call. KD became a Warrior, and things started to roll from there. They had a couple of 7-game win streaks. Then they won 12 in a row. Then they won 14 in a row. 67-15 in the regular season, and doing it in third gear. This team was a walking cheat code. Steph Curry with a 13-3-pointer game. Klay Thompson had 60 in a game in fewer than 30 minutes. Draymond Green was DPOY. Kevin Durant fit in seamlessly, and they had one of the best regular seasons in the history of the association. 11.6 was their point differential, fourth highest in league history, and the playoffs was absolute domination. They swept Portland. They swept Utah. They swept San Antonio. They almost swept Cleveland. It was a gentleman's sweep. They gave up game four, setting the stage for this Tim Roy.
The road to redemption has brought the Warriors back home. The Golden State Warriors are the 2017 NBA champions. Final score, Golden State 129, Cleveland 120. The Warriors win the NBA Finals 4-1 and capture the NBA title for the second time in 3 years.
Best postseason winning percentage in NBA history at 16-1. The Lakers had gone 15-1 a handful of years before. Golden State, Joe, such a dominant performance. It's going to be difficult to choose. Do you choose between the first-time specialness or this absolute super team domination as Championship Madness comes to a close today?
I remember the first time, I don't remember the day of the week, but I remember the first time we had an on-air discussion about the possibility of the Warriors being able to land Kevin Durant in free agency. We were at Moscone Center, Radio Row, getting set for the Broncos-Panthers Super Bowl. Someone had figured out the math and how it could work. We kicked it around. There were a lot of jokes. We didn't take it that serious, but it was a fun conversation. And it built and built and built and got more and more realistic, and then there was the flight to the Hamptons that everyone knows about in the meetings. And then I remember we're all off air. It's like a Monday or a Tuesday, July 4th. And Durant picks July 4th to announce it. And I remember thinking, God, I wish I could rush into the station right now. I remember where I was standing. I was across the street from what is now Gus's in Mission Bay. But it was Market Hall back then. And on all the TVs, it was Durant. I remember Colin Cowherd had taken off that day. Nick Wright was filling in. Cowherd drove from his home to the studio to appear as a guest on his own show. He wanted to talk about it so bad that Durant had landed with the Warriors. And then, as they say, the rest was history. But what an amazing run of conversation to get to that point. I'm going to throw it to Lowe for his pick first. There's one thing I want to mention here. Shame on the voters for not having the 89 Niners in this final. The 89 Niners should absolutely be here. That was my pick to win this thing at the beginning. 14-2. They smash Elway in the Super Bowl 55-10. No one got in their way at any point. They dominate the regular season. They dominate the playoffs. They dominate the Super Bowl. They win all the awards. It was an incredible run. The fact that they got knocked out by the 18 Warriors, which, no disrespect, but come on. That 89 Niners team should have been here. That was my favorite to win it. That's a huge upset, in my opinion. So I just want to get that out there. I'm going to simmer down now, and I'm going to throw it over to Lowe. Lowe, where are you at here? So it's going to be the 15 Warriors against the 17 Warriors for the title.
Definitely the 15 Warriors shouldn't be there. I should be the 89. When you look at the Niners, I thought that would be in there with this particular team, because the 17 Warriors, unbelievable. What they did and the manner they went about doing it was just, I think, arguably one of the greatest teams ever assembled. So it would have been a lot tougher to make this decision. It just goes to show you, it was one guy. What one guy does in the East makes them say, we got to go, four guys got to travel to the Hamptons to bring in, you know, KD to beat LeBron. So this was unreal, this pickup and for KD to come over. So to me, this one's not as tough as it would have been with the Niners team. It's the 17 Warriors. The dominance was just unprecedented.
17 dubs for Lowe as we reach the finals of Bay Area Championship Madness. Dibs, you orchestrated this whole thing. You've talked your way through it. You've researched your way through it. Who wins it?
And thank you, Joe, for yielding the reins of the ship for me for this segment. It's been fun to kind of walk everyone through this. To me, it comes down to dominance versus nostalgia. Not that the 15 team wasn't dominant, because they were, and not because I'm not nostalgic about the 17 team, because I am. We started as a show September 26th of 2016, so that year was the first year for the Warriors on our station, and that was the first year we were together. We, of course, were in the parade together after they won the title, and that season was unbelievably dominant. But to me, it goes back to that first time, and I remember being at the roast of Jason Barrett, our former program director, at Bimbo's 365, watching the game on the Jumbotron when they eliminated Houston to make it to the NBA Finals, and then going to those finals games. Those are moments I'll never forget. So I'm going to go against low kneel in this one, and I'm going to side with the 2015 Warriors, Joe.
You guys have laid it out exactly the way I'm going to lay it out, but we've used different terms through all of it. I'm going to use head versus heart. That's what this comes down to. It's head versus heart. Your head, the data, the stats, the numbers, the eye test, everything is going to point you to the 17 Warriors. Your heart is going to take you right to the 15 Warriors. So it comes down to which direction, which body part you want to follow. Do you want to follow the big grilled cheese, or do you want to follow what matters most and keeping that blood flowing? That's what it comes down to. If this were called Bay Area Emotional Madness, I'm taking the 15 Warriors. I don't think the 15 Warriors should be here. I really don't. Based on the teams they've gone up against, they shouldn't be here. They're not the best championship team. Now, maybe they were the most fun ride. Maybe they were the most surprising. Maybe they were the most emotional. There are so many different ways to look at that 15 team and put them at the top of the heap. But this is Bay Area Championship Madness. We're taking championship teams and pitting them against one another. I love this team, but this is not the champion to end all champions. It's just not. Again, if this were based on emotions, if this were Bay Area emotional madness, yes, they've got my vote. But based on the opportunity, or I should say the options I've been given, I'm going with the 17 Warriors. They were the better championship team. If you take them and you put them up against the 15 team, they smash the 15 team. Durant's going to be the difference. The key could be the bench for the 15 team was a little bit deeper. Buckets and Barbosa and a lot of the guys that were able to contribute, David Lee, much better bench, because when you brought in Durant and you started paying other guys, you clearly didn't have the flexibility to have as robust a bench. That would have been interesting to watch the start of the second quarter with the bench guys from the 15 team versus the 17 team. But if these are the options, I'm going with the 17 team. They were the better championship team. If we want to get emotional about it, happy to talk about 15 all day long. And then, of course, the 2010 Giants. They beat the Phillies. It's such a great time. Pat Burrell, Cody Ross, 250 hitter comes in, puts a couple over the fence, and suddenly he's a hero for the rest of his life. Shame on you all for elevating that man to that point, but that's a story for another day. Nice guy. We'll bring you in on this as well. The 15 dubs versus the 17 dubs.
The 15 dubs for me are going to be the choice, because it's the same for Dibs. That for it's the first time. It is going to be emotional for me in terms of this Bay Area Championship madness. I never watched the 89 Niners play, and watching this 2015 team come to prominence after everything that happened with Monte Ellis bringing in Steph Curry to be at the forefront, going through the injuries, you didn't expect it. Then they were going through the playoffs and losing to the Nuggets, and with Mark Jackson, that they bring in Steve Kerr, getting that first championship for me. I'm going with the 2015 Warriors.
Thank God you guys aren't in control of the nuclear button. Every threat from around the country would be launching nuclear nukes. Use the head, not the heart. All right. That's where we stand. Congratulations to Bay Area Championship Madness. That was a fun ride. Thank you so much, Dibs, for all the work you put into it. You did a fantastic job with both the research, the idea, the presentation, the delivery, all that good stuff. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. All right, here we go. 15 days from today, the first round of the NFL draft. Over the next 10 shows, because this is the start of a new decade, over the next 10 shows, we're going to look back on the decade that was. Every day at 7:30, we're going to go through the draft class of 2010 today. Tomorrow it'll be 2011. Friday will be 2012, and so on. We're going to go through the picks. We're going to grade it, and we want your calls as to how you thought these drafts played out. Remember, all good personnel men will tell you the same thing. You can't properly grade a draft class until 3 years have gone by. Well, 10 years have gone by. So what do you think of 2010? That's coming up next. But first, while we adapt to the new normal, Chilton Auto Body is committed to helping maintain a sense of normalcy. All 12 Chilton Auto Body locations remain open to support you, and we'll pick up and deliver your car when it's ready for the road. Schedule an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs.
I've got a cheer for Jimmy G, if you guys will indulge me for 10 seconds.
Go ahead.
Go, 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 Garoppolo.
Shut this off. Shut this off right now. I don't like where this is going.
On 95.7, The Game.
Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you. Our NFL draft-bound listening audience, because we love you, and because today starts a big-time countdown from now until the first round. As always, the Money Spot brought to you by O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. All right. Guests for the rest of the show. Keith Law, MLB, 28 minutes at 8 o'clock. Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ at 9. Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, ESPN NFL analyst at 9:30. We are 15 days away from the start of the 2020 NFL draft. 15 days. But what we want to do over the next 10 shows is take a look back on the decade that was. We're starting a new decade this year. Shanahan, Lynch, Jed York, they're going to usher in a new era of 49er football. And we saw the start of that over the last couple years. But it's always good to look back on a decade. And over the next 10 shows, we're going to take one draft class from each of the last 10 years, and we're going to go back through it. We're going to talk about it. We're going to ask you about it, and we're eventually going to grade it. Today, we begin with the 2010 draft class. Now, to understand the 2010 draft class, you got to understand the 2009 season. Mike Singletary's first full year as head coach of the team. He had taken over for Mike Nolan halfway through the previous season, went 5-4, if memory serves me correctly. In 2009, the Niners go 8-8. They finish two games back of the Arizona Cardinals in the NFC West, three games back of the Philadelphia Eagles for the second wild card spot. Offensive coordinator Jimmy Ray, they were running the Air Coryell offensive system, 27th in the NFL in total offense. Greg Minuski was the defensive coordinator. They ran a 3-4 base. They finished 15th overall in the NFL in total defense. Heading into this draft, you had Scott McLuhan as your general manager. He was out after the 2009 season. So this was the first year of Trent Baalke. This was Trent Baalke's first draft class for the San Francisco 49ers. They had put together in 2009 their best season since going 10-6 back in 2002, but it was the seventh straight year they had missed the playoffs. And like I said, first draft with Trent Baalke. So here's the rundown of what they did in 2010. If you remember correctly, old Sam Bradford, Mr. Long Sleeves, Mr. Moneybags, Mr. No Production Whatsoever for the cash they've given him over all those years, he went number one overall to the St. Louis Rams. St. Louis Rams. St. Louis Rams, not Los Angeles Rams. Tim Tebow came out of Florida and took the world by storm. He landed with the Broncos at pick number 25. The rundown for what the Niners did in this draft: they had two first-round picks. Ooh, eerily similar to what we see this season. The previous season, they had made a trade with Carolina that allowed them to get an extra first-round pick. And at number 11, they made their first pick this season. Now, what's interesting is that they traded up to get here. They gave up number 13 overall, so they moved up two spots, plus a fourth-round pick, which turned out to be Aaron Hernandez, of all people. Wow. They gave up to move up two spots, where they selected Anthony Davis, offensive tackle out of Rutgers. Their second first-round pick came six spots later at 17. They drafted Mike Iupati, an offensive guard out of Idaho. In the second round, 49 overall, strong safety Taylor Mays out of USC. Third round, 91 overall, you may have heard of him, Navarro Bowman out of Penn State. Then it jumps all the way to the sixth round, where they made three picks: Anthony Dixon, running back out of Mississippi State; Nate Bynum, tight end out of Pittsburgh; Kyle Williams, wide receiver out of Penn State. No, that's Arizona State, excuse me. And then in the seventh round, Phillip Adams, a defensive back out of South Carolina State. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 picks overall, with some Pro Bowlers in there as well. Now, we'll get to the grades in just a moment, and we'll discuss the whole thing. But looking back on the 2010 draftives, I'm going to come to you first on this, because I wasn't living here. And Lowe was still in the league, if memory serves me correctly. What was the mindset? First full season of Mike Singletary, you went 8-8. First winning season in like 7 years. You're coming into this draft with two first-round picks. You got to be feeling pretty good, right?
Yeah, feeling pretty good, but not feeling like this was evoking memories of the Walsh heyday. But certainly you were starting to think this might be a step in the right direction. And let's see if this new GM, is it Baalke? Is that how we pronounce it? Because we weren't, you know, was it Baalke, like the old character from, what, Perfect Strangers, I think, from late 80s, early 90s TV?
Baalke.
Was it Baalke or was it Baalke? We still were wrestling with that, Joe, with the double A. But when you saw what they did in the draft, investing in the trenches, getting Davis and Iupati, in the moment you felt like you were addressing a need, because you already had a tackle in the fold who looked to be a good little player, a first-round pick out of, I believe, Central Michigan, Joe Staley, if I'm not mistaken. So you started to see that at least you had somewhat of a plan to protect your franchise quarterback, Alex Smith. That's where we were, you know. You weren't sure, right, if, right. You know, Alex, when he was drafted, the big knock was he had small hands, and so and he was having ball control issues early in his career, and he hadn't yet shown you that he was an elite quarterback. Come to find out, he was showing you exactly what he was, Low. He was an elite game manager. So getting a couple offensive linemen, you felt good in the moment.
Yeah, you did. I think when you look at that draft and think about the guys that they got, I mean, Davis was a good pick. I mean, could he play? Could the guy, I think he still play. You look at your pod, he's still in the league. So you look at some of the guys, Navarro Bowman, another. So you look at it then and say, wow, are these the guys they needed? They were making the needs and making they were making the necessary needs they needed to do to make their team better, especially to protect your quarterback. So they made some picks and end up turning out to be decent picks. You know, the talent was there. So I don't think that you look at this class, particular class, and say it's an F. If you just said given a grade, it's a solid B, in my opinion, a solid B with the guys they got there.
We'll work our way all the way to the grades in just a moment. If you're looking at Anthony Davis, he played 72 games for the Niners over six seasons. He made 71 starts in his first 4 years, and then he left and he retired and then he came back. And right. There was all that stuff. So that really is a knock on the resume. But those first 4 years, 71 starts, he played 64 of 64 games. He was extremely durable. Now, you have to evaluate, if you look back on that draft, here's who the Niners passed up on by taking Davis. Brandon Graham of the Eagles, who stripped Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, he went two picks later. All right. I don't think that's a huge miss because it took a while to get him going in Philadelphia.
Right.
Earl Thomas went three picks later. Jason Pierre-Paul went four picks later. Now, it's easy to look at those guys and go, man, that's a big miss. Well, if you didn't have a need at those positions, then it doesn't really matter because you weren't targeting those guys anyway. So look at another offensive tackle, and this is where it gets a little dicey. The Niners took Anthony Davis at 11. Brian Bulaga went to Green Bay at number 23. Bulaga had the better career. Bulaga's still in the league. He just landed with the Chargers after a storied career with the Packers. So you got to figure if you had the option between the two, you'd rather go back and take Bulaga over Davis. When it comes to Upati, as we just break down the first round, five seasons with the Niners, three Pro Bowls, one first-team All-Pro nod. Marcus Pouncey went to the Steelers with the next pick at center, and he's been an all-timer. He might end up in the Hall of Fame, but it's hard to argue Upati being a miss. So Davis wasn't a bust by any stretch. I don't know if he was a home run pick. Upati was a very solid pick. If you look at two picks in the first round, how do you feel they came away? Going in with their needs, Anthony Davis and Mike Upati, based on what they got out of them and what they could have had, how would you just assess the first round that year, Dibs?
I would give him a B, and it's unfortunate because Anthony Davis was on a trajectory to be not a Hall of Famer, but to be a good, solid, veteran NFL player. You mentioned 64 starts in his first four seasons, and if you look at what that Niner offense was able to do with not a lot, quite frankly. You had Frank Gore, and we mentioned Alex Smith and his limitations as a guy who can go out there and win you games. You had Michael Crabtree and Vernon Davis, but not a ton else. And I know we're going to get to Kyle Williams momentarily. He was also a rookie that year. So you look at what they were able to do in part because of the offensive line. Anthony Davis was legit. Now, how his career ended with the, do I want to play? Do I not want to play? That's, I mean, Low, I can't judge a guy for that. Shoot, you played 16 years in the NFL. You're the anomaly in that fact.
Yeah, I think, Joe, when you ask me, you know, what's a grade, how do you look at both of them? I think for the draft, you say an A. The draft for what they needed and what they got, as far as just the drafting those, A minus. But then I say, but then after you say, okay, now you ask two, afterwards you say, okay, now give the grade for what they did and what were they, then I go to a C. I go to a C plus. I think because you looked at, like you saw about Anthony Davis, a guy who didn't want to play, who heart wasn't in it. Upati battled injuries. Upati, you know, weight kind of got to him, but still was a solid player. So I go C plus on that, but I give him an A for the pick, and I give him for what they played and what they got out of two first-round picks. I say C.
All right, if you get this, exactly this, not these same positions because you know you don't need a tackle and a guard. That's not what the Niners are going to do in the first round. But the Niners have two picks, 13 and 31. Back in 2010, they had 11 and 17. They came away with Davis, who gave you 64 starts in 64 games over the first 4 years, extremely durable, and then Upati. Five seasons with the team, and then he left in free agency, went to three Pro Bowls, was a first-team All-Pro. the production you got for those two over that stretch, would you take that level of production from the two guys that are going to be coming in on this year's draft class? Yes or no, Dibs?
Yes, and I like what you did as far as like laying that out, because I was immediately thinking, let's say you take a corner at 31 and he gives you the Upati resume, and let's say you take a tackle at, 13, and he gives you the Anthony Davis resume, even though you're not thrilled because it's just 4 years. Your window, as Lowe's been laying out, is, 1 to 2 to 3 years, maybe 5 if you do everything perfectly right and Jimmy G continues to ascend. So if you get 4 years, 64 starts out of a legit tackle, I think you take it right now without a doubt.
Lowe, are you doing the same thing? If you get the production you got out of Anthony Davis and Mike Upati for the duration you got it, would you take that from the two picks the Niners are about to give you this draft 15 days from today?
Yeah, a bird in hand's better than two in the bush. If you say put it like that way, I'd take it. Yeah, I would, especially because the window's now.
All right, interesting. Now, in the second round, Taylor Mays, what a swing and miss. And I'll be the first to say, when he was at USC, I thought he was going to be the next big thing. I thought he was Sean Taylor, the second coming. This dude was huge.
Everyone
he was shredded.
Did.
He was strong.
Fast. Run.
And the thing is, playing defense for UFC, he was everywhere. He was everywhere on the field, but it was very suspicious because he had, if memory serves, he had a monster season in a monster bowl game, and then he didn't come out. If memory serves me correctly, I should go back and look at this, and I remember thinking, why is this dude not coming out? He's a top 10 pick. He could be a top 5 guy. Well, it turns out he was a great college player, but in the pros, his instincts, his ball awareness, his awareness of the defense, his willingness to try to improve upon his shortcomings all got exposed. And that's probably why he was advised to stay another year. He goes pro. The Niners take him number 49 overall. He plays 16 games his first year, but he only starts 6. They ended up trading him after the year to Cincinnati for an undisclosed draft pick. Think about that. A second round pick that's gone in 1 year's time to Cincinnati. 4 picks gone after Taylor Mays was Sean Lee, the linebacker out of Penn State. And 9 picks after Taylor Mays was Golden Tate, wide receiver out of Notre Dame. 1 year later, you got to give that an F, right? Is there any way to justify the Taylor Mays pick? 1 season, 6 starts, and then traded for an undisclosed pick. Is there any way to say, Lowe, that that wasn't an F?
No, you can say, yeah, you could say F plus if you want, but yeah, without a doubt.
Without F plus.
Yeah, so, yeah, it wasn't even close. Yeah, without a doubt, you could not give that a passing grade. Definitely an F for a guy, though, that big, though. A lot of teams would have missed him. You saw him, Joe, like you said.
That's it.
Big stature, could run, yeah. Could hit. Everyone's like, oh my God, this guy is the next thing to Shanti. They were comparing him because he's physical. Yeah.
He's a freak.
That's why I give it a D-minus, Joe, because everybody had him as a, like you say, the year before he was, you might be a top 10. You're certainly top half of the first round. So it's not like the Niners reached on a guy from a nowhere school. I mean, we all saw this guy on Saturday lighting people up in the Pac-12, knee the Pac-10.
Yeah. The thing with Mays is that if you go back and read some of the stories, that was absolutely that was a Singletary pick. That this was Balky's first draft, but Singletary was banging the table so hard for this guy that eventually they caved in and they let him make the pick at 49. He goes with Taylor Mays, and it turns out to be a massive bust. Back to Balky, you get to the third round, number 91 overall. How do you not love it? Navarro Bowman out of Penn State. Now, some people would say, how the hell did Bowman fall to the third round? 2 issues. 1, durability. 2, character. There was a fight, I believe, he was involved in. Some sort of thing at Penn State. I don't think it was huge, but there were a couple things that popped up, and that combined with the durability was an issue. And that's why he ended up falling. This was a pretty slick move for the Niners because they traded back and selected Navarro Bowman. And with the trade back, they ended up getting picks that resulted in Anthony Dixon, who they took later in the draft in the 6th round. And then Kendall Hunter out of Oklahoma State, if you remember that pick. So you traded back, landed Bowman, and then got Anthony Dixon and Kendall Hunter. Bowman played 8 seasons for the Niners, 4-time first-team All-Pro. 4 picks later was Jimmy Graham, just to give you some perspective. Not saying they should have done that, but just to give you some perspective, Jimmy Graham goes 4 picks later. Bowman's an A+. Is there any other way to slice it, Dibs?
No, I don't believe in the A plus, but in this case, I'll go ahead and begrudgingly throw the plus on the pick of A. Not only because you got a guy who's an all-time 49er, but you got him in the third round, Coach. And you talk about a guy sliding for character and Navarro Bowman in the same sentence. Personally, I don't see it. It's like saying Patrick Willis was too outgoing. Those things just don't go together in the same sentence. But, you know, college, whatever happens in college, and you spent a lot of time at State College, so you probably know better than anyone if this is something that got blown out of proportion or whatnot. But Navarro Bowman in the third round low, that might go down as one of the better picks of this decade as we go through it.
Yeah, and that's why you got to give it to A+. That's why definitely, Dan, you got to give it to A+, because you got him in the third round, and he was definitely an A+ player. So without a doubt, that pick right there is an A++. I mean, he was absolutely nails. Doesn't get injured. I mean, who knows? He's a Hall of Fame. I think he could possibly be a Hall of Fame type of linebacker if he doesn't get injured.
Let's redraft the first round in 2010. Bowman was a third rounder. I'm just going to read off the picks. You don't need to go into crazy analysis unless you've got something, right? If it's an easy one, just give me your yes or no. Would Bowman go ahead of? I'm going to go in order with the draft picks, and then you guys let me know if Bowman would go ahead of or not. Pick number one, Sam Bradford. Redraft today. Does Bowman go ahead of him?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Pick number two, Ndamukong Suh.
No.
No.
Okay, there's one. Pick number three, Gerald McCoy, now with the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, no.
Close.
All right, so that's two. Interesting. Trent Williams, offensive tackle, Washington Redskins, sat out last year because of the contract dispute.
Yeah, still no.
Really? No. So you got, okay, you got them ahead of Bowman. Eric Berry to the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's a close one. I would say no.
I'd say yes, he goes ahead of Berry.
Interesting. All right. I'll only go with the unanimous one. So you already have three guys ahead of Bowman. Russell Okung, offensive tackle, Seattle Seahawks. Still around.
Yeah, I'd say no.
He goes ahead of Bowman, I think.
Okay. Joe Hayden, cornerback out of Florida to the Cleveland Browns. Still playing. He's with the Steelers.
Yeah, I'd still like Bowman on that one, though.
You like Bowman?
I take him
there.
Ahead of Bowman. I like Hayden there.
All right. You guys are split. Rolando McClain to the Oakland Raiders at 8.
Bowman.
Bowman. All right. CJ Spiller, running back Clemson to the Buffalo Bills at 9.
Bowman.
All right. Tyson Alualu, defensive lineman out of Cal. He went to the Jaguars at 10.
Bowman.
All right. Bowman. Would you take Bowman over Anthony Davis?
Bowman.
All right. Ryan Matthews to the Chargers at 12. Oh, Fresno State. The Chargers moved up like 17 picks to draft Matthews out of Fresno State.
Bowman.
Low turning against Fresno there.
He's honest. Yeah. Brandon Graham, pass rusher.
I don't do what you dibs when it comes to stuff like this. I won't just say things just to say them. Okay, just go ahead, Joe. Okay.
Brandon Graham, defensive end out of Michigan to the Eagles at 13. Still playing.
Bowman.
Graham.
A split there. Earl Thomas to the Seahawks at 14.
Thomas.
Earl Thomas. I'll take Thomas.
All right, Lowe's taking Talis. Jason Pierre-Paul to the Giants.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
That's tough.
You going with Pierre-Paul?
Yeah, I'd go with the same, Pierre-Paul.
Interesting. Derek Morgan to the Tennessee Titans. I'm going to let you go on that one. What about Mike Iupati? Who would you end up taking? Who would you rather have? Iupati had some good seasons.
Yeah. I'd go with Bowman, though, on that one.
Bowman. All right. Marcus Pouncey.
Pouncey.
All right. Sean Weatherspoon, linebacker to the Atlanta Falcons.
Bowman.
Kareem Jackson, cornerback to the Houston Texans.
Bowman.
Jermaine Gresham, tight end to the Bengals.
Bowman.
Demaryius Thomas, wide receiver Broncos.
Thomas.
Come on.
Take Demaryius Thomas.
No, you wouldn't. Would you really?
Demaryius Thomas, he's still playing, is he not?
Yeah, but
if he is, he's not producing. You take Demaryius Thomas over Navarro Bowman?
I'm going Bowman on that one.
I think you'd find that they have similar number of high-quality years.
Brian Bulaga, offensive tackle to the Packers.
I take
still
Bulaga.
Tackle. I take tackle.
Dez Bryant.
Bowman.
I take Bryant.
You take Dez Bryant over Bowman?
That was all hype, Coach.
He had like a five-year run that was Antonio Brownian.
All right, Tim Tebow to the Broncos at 25.
Ooh, that's tough, but I'm going to go Bowman.
Yeah, it's not. That's not tough. Dan Williams, defensive tackle to the Arizona Cardinals out of Tennessee.
Bowman.
Yeah, Bowman.
Devin McCourty, cornerback, New England Patriots.
Take McCourty.
Yeah,
McCourty. All right, McCourty. Then you've got Jared Odrick, Kyle Wilson, Javid Best, Jerry Hughes, and Patrick Robinson, all guys that you're probably taking right. Bowman over. So it's really a handful. So you probably have Bowman in the first round, obviously, given the career, but you still have a handful of guys.
Top 10, probably.
You would take. He's probably flirting with 10 if you know know now. Because you get into the second round, Roger Saffold, Chris Cook, Brian Price, Dexter McCluster, Nate Allen, TJ Ward, Aurelius Ben, Koa Misi, Terrell Tropp, Gronk goes 42. Wow. In the famous pick. The next pick is the Ravens at 43. They took Sergio Kindle, a linebacker out of Texas. A lot of people don't realize this. Gronk coming out of Arizona had serious back issues, which is why he fell to the second round. People weren't sure if he could stay healthy. The Ravens are drafting at 43. And this is probably why John Harbaugh is talking about how he's afraid his draft could end up getting hacked. And he's probably talking about the Patriots. Because in 2010... they're getting ready to go on the clock. The Bills are drafting at number 41. They make their pick. And then I believe it's the Raiders at 42. The Patriots find a way to trade up one spot ahead of the Ravens to draft Gronk because they knew that's who Baltimore wanted. Now, people say, that's not actually true. The Ravens took a linebacker next. How do you know? The Ravens went on to draft both. Ed Dixon, tight end out of Oregon, and Dennis Pitta, tight end out of BYU. They were desperate for a tight end. They loved Gronk that year, and the Patriots knew it. And they got up one spot ahead of Ozzie Newsome and John Harbaugh right before they were about to get on the clock to steal Rob Gronkowski. Like, think about what happens with the dynasty over the last how many years if that pick doesn't take place, if that trade doesn't take place. This is why you've got to be buttoned up. That's a franchise-altering pick right there. Whether you want to agree to it or not. You don't have to say Gronk's a Hall of Famer, but if Baltimore gets Gronk instead of the Patriots, do the Patriots go on to win 3 Super Bowls over the last decade?
No. No, absolutely not. When you think about what Gronk brought to the table and how much he was Brady's security blanket, without a doubt, they do not win those 3. So at that pick, like you said, Joe, to jump up one spot to know that Baltimore won and got their guy, Gronk was unbelievable. Arguably one of the better tight ends, best tight ends in the league, Dibs.
Yeah, and you look at a bicycle without a seat, you can still ride a bicycle with no seat. You're going to be standing up a lot, and you're going to have to figure out how you're going to maneuver the bicycle without actually sitting down on it. And Rob Gronkowski was Tom Brady's bicycle seat, like Lowe's saying,
right.
The comfort zone, the security blanket.
That's a really, really odd analogy.
Super
Rob
odd, Joe.
Rob Gronkowski was Tom Brady's bicycle seat?
Tom Brady could perform, the offense could go, they could still manage without Rob Gronkowski, but it's an uncomfortable ride. You're standing up the whole time, you're in your saddle, you can't really get comfortable, but when you've got a bike seat, Joe, and I don't know how much bicycling you ever do anymore. You probably haven't been on your bike in like a month now. That thing's probably got cobwebs over there.
Shots
in the corner,
fired. 15-mile ride on Sunday. 15-mile ride on Sunday. So look at you coming in really loose and getting knocked out in the opening 10 seconds of the fight.
That's like
it's
when
probably
you fight
cooked
Tyson.
In cobwebs.
This is Mike Tyson.
12-mile
Mike
ride.
Tyson.
I rode to the Golden Gate Bridge and back on Sunday. So, yeah,
that's
there you go.
That's a decent little ride. That's
what else you got
ride.
for your no bike seat analogy? So, without Gronk, Brady's riding a bike with no seat. He's just getting jammed the whole time. Is that what you're saying?
Let me ask you this, Joe. In your quaint little 12-mile pedal to the Golden Gate Bridge, shout out bicycling. Did you have a bike seat, Joe? Did you find yourself sitting on the seat very much on your
I
ride?
Did. I had a bike seat, yes.
Now, go ahead
I
and imagine if you had to make that ride without having a bike seat. And that's what Tom Brady would have had to do without Rob Gronkowski. You could still
nice
ride to the Golden Gate Bridge. Thank you, Lo. You get a 2-point reversal as we go wrestling with my
no,
red armband and my white armband.
It's absolutely not. That analogy makes no sense at all. Who rides a bike without a seat? Like every human on earth, with the exception of, and if you watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia, everyone knows about Mac's bike in the later seasons. That's outside of that, who rides a bike without a seat? No
so
one.
You're saying Mac had a bike with no seat in Always Sunny?
Mac has a bike where he took the seat off and it's replaced by, shall we say, a device used for fun amongst people of consenting degrees. I'll dance around it. Okay, so that's nice. Essentially the bike you're suggesting that Tom Brady, a Super Bowl champ and a Hall of Famer in his own right, was riding prior to getting Gronkowski. Gronkowski, a bike seat.
In essence, he was riding uncomfortably, Joe. And I think Lo
he had won
exactly
3 Super Bowls. How was he riding uncomfortably? He had been to 5 and he had won 3.
You can still ride effectively when you're out of the seat, but when you get a tight end of that ilk, you have a chance to settle down low.
Tight
low,
end,
I'm talking about.
But
third down,
tight end,
yes.
And it's butt seat. How about tight end and the seat? This is going well.
Thank you,
got
Lo.
The tight end.
I appreciate having your support in this fashion. And Joe, right. I'll try to walk you through it in the post-show post-mortem. But,
yeah. Yeah.
There you go. But I think, does Gronkowski go first overall if you redraft that 2010 draft? He's top five for sure, but does he go number one?
No, I don't think so. This was definitely a weak quarterback class because we didn't end up reading just about any quarterbacks in this class. If you work your way through it, I don't know. I mean, a tight end number one overall, like if you know everything you know about these guys, probably not. But there's actually a case to be made. I think Earl Thomas goes a hell of a lot earlier. I think you could make the right case Earl Thomas is a number one. And outside of that, I think Marcus Pouncey is probably sliding up in your top five there. And you got some offensive linemen. But this would be the one class. I don't think a single quarterback, but Tim Tebow. There's your first round quarterback. Tim Tebow and then, of course, Sam Bradford. Bradford falls to where based on what you know now? What would Bradford fall to if you redrafted 2010?
Probably third or fourth round, if that, right?
Thank God. He wouldn't have been able to rob everyone so successfully over all those years. That is crazy. Really? All right, to put a bow on it, because Keith Law is going to join us in 2 minutes. You had Anthony Dixon in the sixth round. 64 games over 4 years for the Niners. 8 rushing touchdowns. Greg Hardy was selected 2 picks later. Nate Bynum, the tight end out of Pittsburgh, was a sixth-round pick for the Niners in 2010. 14 games with 3 starts over that first year. Then he ended up getting cut. Kyle Williams, the name still brings chills, 206 overall. He played 38 games over 3-plus seasons, 59 receptions, 4 touchdowns. He was cut November 12, 2013. So you got some production out of him, sixth-round pick. Phillip Adams, defensive back out of South Carolina State, 15 games for the Niners as a rookie, and he ended up getting cut September 3rd, 2011. So he didn't last more for a year. I'll throw it out to Dibs first and then over to Lo. How would you grade this class 10 years later as we look at the 2010 San Francisco 49ers draft class, something we're going to do for the next 10 days for the last 10 years? Tomorrow will be 2011. We're going to do it every day at 7:30. How would you grade the 2010 class?
I give them an A-, Joe, because you got a legend in the third round in Navarro Bowman, and that pick is an absolute smash. Your first-round picks both helped you for a significant amount of time. I know you wanted more than 4 years at Anthony Davis, but he gave you 4 solid years when you were rising back to prominence, and Mikey Potty's been a great player. Anthony Dixon as a rookie made a solid impact, so you got something out of that sixth-round pick. And Kyle Williams, God help him, he was put in a bad situation. If it wasn't for that fateful game against the Giants, he's remembered differently. I got it as a B+, Joe.
Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. If you want to weigh in, remember to download the radio.com app so you can take Joe Lo and Dibs on the go with you. Dibs is going with, what'd you say? You said A-?
B+. I have it at a B+.
B+.
He changed it. He went A- and then he dropped down to B+. So.
All right, he's at a B+. Where are you at? 2010 draft. How do you see it?
I love you, Dibs. I'm giving it a C+. I'm going to C+. Here's the thing you have to realize. If you have 2 first-round picks, and you could just watch that with this particular class the Niners have now. You're always going to sign someone to a second-term deal. If you got a first-round guy, you are trying. Most teams keep their first-rounder for 2 terms. That's just the way it is because of the fact that's why.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.